Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Super Real.
Hey, I'm Julian Morgans, and you're listening to What It Was Like, the show that asks people who have lived through big, dramatic events what it was like. Hello, welcome back to another episode. It's a new year, so happy new year. And on the topic of years, let's talk about 1999. Now, it was kind of a while ago now, but it sticks in my memory pretty firmly. And that's because I turned 13, I became a teenager. So the aesthetic, the mood, the technology, it's all kind of firmly anchored in my mind. I remember that everyone was wearing like really baggy jeans and like South Park boxer shorts made of satin. And I remember that my school, they got their first digital camera and it was like the size of a toaster, but all the teachers were really, really happy about it. And I remember the incredible artwork on the cover of Limp Bizkit's seminal album, Significant Other. Do you remember that? So yeah, I've got all this stuff that just sort of sticks in my mind from this year. And the other thing is Woodstock. Woodstock 99, which for some reason, I don't know why, I never took much interest in the news as a kid. No one really does, but me especially. But for some reason, I took notice that like it was the 30th anniversary of the original Woodstock hippie sort of music and art fair. And the organizers, they wanted to do it again. So they'd invited about 400,000 kids to a former Air Force base in upstate New York. And they got a selection of like the world's biggest, most angry bands to play across two stages. So I'd taken notice of this and I'd like to pretend it was because there was some really cool bands playing like Rage Against the Machine. But the fact is it was Limp Bizkit. And I was like, damn, I'd like to go see that. But anyway, I didn't. So it was supposed to be like this beautiful celebration of love and peace that would close out the 1990s, but instead it turned into a total disaster. On the final night, the crowd rioted, setting fire to food trucks and tearing apart the stage. No one died, but sexual assault was just rife, and the medical tent apparently filled up with all these burned, injured teenagers. And then troopers from the New York State Police were brought in wearing riot gear just to get everything under control. Now, you actually might know all of this already because you'll have recently watched Trainwreck, Woodstock 99 on Netflix. And I saw it too. It was great. It was fantastic. It was a three-part documentary series, and I really enjoyed it. But I have to say, I've got one little criticism, and that is that I just wanted to know what it felt like to be there. Like, the documentary provided a great bird's eye view on how it all fell apart and maybe like the broader sociological context of all that male aggression. But I don't know, it kind of left me wanting. I think history is most interesting when you get a sense of what it was like to be in the middle. I mean, this is probably comes as no surprise. I've got this show called What It Was Like. So I really wanted to capture this. So I went looking for people who'd been arrested at Woodstock 99. And I did that because I figured that if you got arrested at Woodstock, then you were probably really in the middle of it. So I scoured local papers looking for names. And I found this guy. Okay, I found this one guy whose name had been published. There was this headline about how this man from Washington State had been arrested, and his name was Kelvin Cardwell. And apparently he'd assaulted a cop, and I thought, well, I bet that man has a story. So I tracked down Kelvin, who was there with his friend Chad Yantis, and that's who we're hearing from today, Kelvin and Chad. Kelvin was 17 at the time, and Chad was 18, and I got the impression that like they'd had really like nice upbringings. Neither of them had been in trouble. One of their mums actually packed them like snacks for their journey across the country on the train. So that just gives you a sense of like who these people were. And yet this is the story of how they ended up in a riot and how Kelvin went to jail and accidentally became the poster boy for all of the mayhem at Woodstock 99. Okay, Kelvin, Chad, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Okay, so you guys were both living on the West Coast at the time. You weren't like New York locals at all.
No,
we were about as far away as we could get from Woodstock.
All right, so walk me through that. You guys were pretty young. How did you get across the country?
First, I had to beg parents for permission. That was a trick of its own. We saved the money and got a train ticket. It was a 3-day trip, if I remember right. And the closer we got to New York, the more people were going and the crazier the train ride got.
Yeah, I can imagine. Were you guys drinking at the time?
Not that we weren't drinking, but just couldn't get it, right? Because we're all underage, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I imagine there was a fair bit of drunken tomfoolery happening on the train.
It was a lot more smoke and weed than it was drinking, I think. But I think, what I remember people too, like airplane bottles of liquor and stuff like that on the train, and then other drugs and stuff too, especially when you got close.
Wow.
The last 12 hours was like its own crazy wild party. They put us all in our own train car, or maybe two, and pretty much left us alone because it was getting too wild on the rest of the train to have us spread out.
They had the smoking car stills back then, so it was like you'd go down to the smoking car and it was just everybody just smoking weed and pretty funny.
Yeah. Okay. And Chad, this one's for you. So after 3 days, that's a long journey. You know, like you get to New York, you finally arrive at it was an Air Force base, I believe.
Yeah.
So you finally arrive at the place. So walk me through your first impressions.
Just kind of crazy. So when we got there, they, you know, the train let us all off, and then they had buses that were waiting there to like bus us out to essentially the middle of nowhere for this Air Force base, right? And then when we got there, it was just craziness with what they called it, the peace patrol, like, you know, going through and trying to like check for, you know, wanding everybody and stuff like that. But they weren't doing anything, right? You had people just like tapping metal detectors on people's belts and them going off and just letting everybody in. And people, you know, dragging coolers, tents, and all sorts of craziness just through the gates. And so it's just kind of wild even just getting in there.
Yeah, the amount of people and the sea of cars to walk over there was incredible. And yeah, they were just trying to pass people in as quick as possible so that the line didn't get built up too much.
Yeah.
And tell me about the crowd. Like, I imagine that it was huge.
Yeah, I mean, seas of people. I mean, like, everywhere. And now, again, it was the Air Force base, so it was you're walking along the tarmac to get to the different, you know, areas. So there was a somewhat space, but I mean, it was crazy. Like, the tent situation was funny because we got there, and it was literally where you got to go set up your tent was just packed. And we're just kind of walking on these teeny pathways through, and we eventually found this one, like, perfect circle. They're like, oh, it's the one spot left to put our tent. Well, we pitched our tent there and everything like that. We realized what it was a circle of people who had tried to make their own little spot, and we just plopped right in the middle of it just because there was nowhere else.
Okay, so you guys get your tent set up in someone else's picnic area. So you guys are there for 24 hours. Day two, Limp Bizkit's playing. And this is when things start to really get a bit wild. Tell me about it.
I remember us being really hot and like hanging, like there was a fire hose just blowing water that we were sitting under that for a little while trying to cool down, and boards, people passing boards off the wall. And I think that the lead singer like encouraged that, said, pass one of them up here. And then, yeah, that was just really a wild memory to see people ripping down the wall to the outside of the event center.
Yeah, I think Fred Durst eventually like jumped on the board somewhat and like crowd surfed on the board a little bit. And we had, I think, kind of gone back up a little bit by then, down into the crowd more. Because I remember seeing it from the right side of the stage and kind of not being way far
back. Pretty low.
Yeah.
What did you think of that, Chad? Were you impressed or nervous?
I'm not nervous. I mean, again, we'd been in many crowds before, right? So that was all fun. You know what I mean? Like running around, seeing chicks on shoulders, the whole festival type of atmosphere, right? And then, again, seeing that him encourage that, him jumping on the thing and the boards running around the stage, or around the crowd. So yeah, no, that was fun.
Okay. And when you say people were like passing boards around, like I think the set, like the stage was built out of these like plywood boards or something, like tearing them off. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, the walls around the whole thing were all plywood boards too.
Okay, all right. So let's just move forward to Sunday, right? Sunday is when shit got real. When you woke up in the morning, did you have any premonition or was it just a regular morning?
I would say just a regular morning. Again, we were, we meandered about a lot. I mean, we went to different shows. We would kind of, again, like Calvin said, between, fact check this or whatever, but like half mile, three quarters of a mile between one, stage and the other, because they're at the opposite ends of the tarmac, right? So we would just go to one and then we would kind of wander back all the way across to the other and see what was going on in between. But it wasn't really until that night that, and I swear it was Megadeth that we were watching on the one stage, when it all kind of started, we noticed everything started going nuts.
I remember there being a glow on the horizon was the first thing that seemed different as we were walking to go see Chili Peppers, and people walking away from the show and not towards the show, because we knew we were a little bit late to the show.
And I think we first saw it on the screen, right? They had the big TVs up showing the opposite end.
Oh, yeah.
And they started showing Chili Peppers over there. And then I think, the other one was, not to go backwards, but Metallica, because when they played, remember it started raining? And they announced on stage, like, there's a thunderstorm. And they start telling everybody, don't touch anything metal. Well, you got 500,000 people being pushed up against metal stages and stuff like that. And them announcing, hey, don't touch anything metal, because if a lightning strikes, you're all going to die, right? So I think that was another time when it started getting a little weird, being like, how the hell are you guys going to control this? What was the other thing on the stage, too? They were, like, saying...
Remember, they also had the... They had a security guard driving like a little gator cart for Metallica show, and everybody climbed on his cart and he kept yelling people to get off, and they like too many people got on it and he couldn't drive anywhere. He was stuck there in the middle of the crowd with people standing on his cart to see the show better.
Yeah.
And he was on the radio trying to get help and nobody would come. Oh, I remember that was kind of wild.
And the other announcement I remember was them saying, don't take the like... blue ecstasy or something like that. And they like just announcing, if you see this, we've got like a bunch of people in the medical tent because they're, taking whatever it was at the time. And it was that was another kind of a crazy one.
Wow. That's bad vibes. It sounds like for a number of reasons, there was just this sort of bad aura around the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that people talk about. Like that's one of the facets of this story is just how the energy kind of soured maybe over the weekend. I don't know. Would you guys agree with that? What do you think, Chad?
I think that as you started seeing more and more what was going on, you saw less of that peace, love vibe and more of the like people being a little more destructive. People tearing down, like, I remember the mud and the porta potties too was just people rolling in mud, and you look behind it, there's a line of porta potties, and you're like, dude, that's disgusting. What the hell are you guys even rolling in, you know? Stuff like that. But then throwing bottles and stuff like that too. And like more like a frat boy type of party versus like a peace, love, hippie type of Woodstock era party, you know what I mean? So that was definitely, yeah, you know, the feeling, especially getting later and later.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it has also been made of the way women were treated at this festival. You know, that there was a lot of, I mean, I don't have any numbers with me, but a lot of stats around sexual assault, and mm-hmm. I think there were quite a few rapes reported over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Did you guys get this sense? Did you see anything? You know, what was the mood there in that way?
To my memory, we didn't witness anything along those lines, except for a couple people would grope girls as they were trying to crowd surf, and for the most part, other people would stand up for them or stop these people from doing it. So there was a lot of good people out there trying to help people, but I could see those situations did happen, and that's, yeah, terrible.
I think definitely a lot of intoxication involved with, you know, just being taken advantage of there, Amir 8.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, with a frat boy atmosphere, everyone turbocharged on drink. Okay, all right. So Kelvin, you were saying before that, or you guys were describing walking towards the Chili Peppers and seeing this glow on the horizon, and everyone's kind of walking mm-hmm. in the opposite direction. So you guys are kind of, you're almost walking upstream, really, into the crowd. What did that feel like? You know, were you guys kind of like, what the hell's going on?
It seemed like a 50-50, half the people were walking away and half the people were going towards the show. And just noticing the glow on the horizon and then finally coming up over this like little hill of some sort and seeing down into the stage, and there was, I think there might have been like one reasonable size fire going at that point. And I heard a couple people say like, there's fires, go ahead and go back the other way as we were walking towards the show. But we're like, but we want to see Chili Peppers. Like, and they're still playing.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about the fire? Were you concerned?
Not at that point, no.
No, I mean, it was...
I wasn't, at least.
It was getting bigger, but like, again, by that time, I think more people had started... The crowd was more dispersed, so it wasn't like you were forced mm-hmm. to get to... And it's such a huge area that it wasn't like... I wasn't concerned that I was going to get burnt or anything like that. And there was nothing to burn there except for what they were throwing in.
What were they throwing in? What was the fire made of?
Plywood.
Speakers, I'm thinking. Yeah, plywood from the wall.
Yep. They tore down the speaker towers. Yeah, I mean, yeah, just whatever they could find that would burn. And I'm sure that once some of that plastic and crap started going, it wasn't going to stop very quick. Honestly, we were there for a little while, and then more and more fires. It was basically every speaker tower, from what I remember, there would, you know, they were able to kind of like mm-hmm. start a fire there, right? And so you would have these, I mean, just big pockets of fires. And then eventually they started lighting the semi-trucks on fires. And that was the big, huge thing. Oh, and then, eventually they got into the, it was refrigerated semi-trailers, right? So they had fuel and everything on them. And then it was frozen pretzels, right? There was just, they had broken into a truck full of frozen pretzels. And there was pretzels just flying everywhere, like in the whole area.
My favorite was the glow sticks.
Yes.
There was like a glow stick war. It looked like a Star Wars battle. There was green and red glow sticks flying back and forth from, you know, hundreds of people throwing these things at each other, just having a war, but, you know, having fun. But that was I forgot about the pretzels until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I mean, frozen pretzels are hard. You know, if you got hit in the head by a frozen pretzel, that's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do either of you have any specific memories of like the kinds of people who were causing this mayhem?
So I know that the speaker towers didn't seem to go down until after Chili Peppers left the stage and people were upset that the show was over. And so that's when they started knocking down that. And then we saw, you know, people light the other things on fire. But we were hanging out next to one of the fires, and it was like a drum circle almost. People were using the frame of the speaker towers as a drum, and like having sticks and having a whole like drum circle almost, but it wasn't like a hippie drum circle. It was just really hard to describe because there was no music going on, but there was like in its own way.
Wow. Wow. This is like pagan death metal.
Yeah. I think you had like the combination of a bunch
of... very industrial.
Bunch of like frat boy anger and tearing stuff apart, and then like the more hippie-ish drum circle people taking advantage and just walking around like, and like I think there was other people like us, we weren't doing anything, we were just enjoying the spectacle to some extent, right? I mean, neither of us were scared or anything like that. I mean, and you call it a riot, but it wasn't like people were fighting each other, right? It was more like they were fighting the corporate, you know, entity that was this Woodstock show, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's been spoken about a lot, about how like the extortionate prices for water and stuff fueled the frustration that caused this problem. Does that feel accurate to you?
I'd say yeah. I mean, like, just for example, I remember one time, Calvin, I don't know if you remember this, like, we had just come down, I think it was more earlier in the morning, and we'd sat next, the show hadn't even started, we're all sitting, and this one guy, like, handed us a joint, and we smoke, right? And then we both just got so high that we had to go get water, and there was, like, no option. And I think Calvin mentioned earlier, there was a dude with just a fire hose that if you had, I think we may have even found random bottles on the ground just to like go fill up our water from a fire hose just to be able to not, you know, pass out from, you know, being hot and high and, you know, dizzy or whatever. So that was the part that was kind of crazy.
There's dirt in that water that we were filling up those bottles. And I remember I was drinking it knowing that there was sand and stuff in it, but we were so hot and dehydrated that we didn't really care.
We're going to take a quick ad break here, and we'll be right back with more What It Was Like.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Okay, all right, so it's Sunday night, and then there's these fires happening and glow stick wars, and people are chucking frozen pretzels around. And Kelvin, you got arrested. Do you want to tell me about how this happened?
Yeah, I think Chad got to see it. It was very strange from my point of view. We were at one of those drum circle-esque things, talking to some guy we just met and saying, you know, this is wild, this is crazy. Just kind of dancing around, and all of a sudden I got like hit in the back and knocked over. And in my head, I just instantly thought like, you know, some drunk guy just stumbled and ran into me. It was no big deal. And I go to get up, and all of a sudden I get my hands put behind my back and arrested and started getting to walk off. And I don't know what you saw from that point, Chad, but I remember like looking back at you, like, what the hell's going on? I had no idea what had happened at that point. It was just out of the blue.
Damn. Chad, what did you see?
Yeah, so we were standing, it was like, I swear, it's like four or five of those refrigerated trailers all on fire, right? So this huge fire, and to Kaplan's point, I mean, there was a bunch of people there, and I remember some of the cops were all there by that point, and so they were all in their like riot gear, and there was a cop, Calvin, I don't remember this, like on a like a four-wheeler, like a little ATV, kind of driving around in between where the whole crowd was standing in that huge fire. And we were standing there with just a mm-hmm. dude that we were just met. So it was me and then this dude that I don't know if you remember his name, but and then standing next to him was Calvin. And from behind, to his point, he got pushed. But it was weird because it was just a plain clothed cop guy. It wasn't any of the other cops who were in like their full like riot gear with their helmets and stuff. And he just pushed them like into the circle. And once they were kind of into the circle is when they, you know, other cops kind of joined and like, you know, tied him up and took him off. And to me, it was like, literally, I took a step back because now there's like three riot cops and then like this other guy arresting both of them.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
So, Kelvin, you weren't breaking anything. You say you were just standing there.
I was standing there sort of dancing to the drums that were going on. And yeah, just out of the blue, I hadn't done anything. It was interesting experience overall.
Yeah. So what happened to you?
So they took us to a court, like I'm pretty sure they had a judge on site to tell us. Well, first of all, they put me in the back of the cop car with the back window busted out, sitting on broken glass. I remember looking back and seeing a couple of the tractor trailer's propane tanks exploding.
Wow.
And after sitting in that car for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so with the cop, they finally like drove us not very far to where they had a judge, I'm pretty sure, at least on site. And they like said, yeah, go ahead and lock him up. We'll deal with this on Monday. And yeah, it was like a courtroom at night. It was very surreal to look back and try to think about it. And I had no idea if my friend was going to be able to find me. I had no idea if I was going to be able to catch the train. Like all these things were starting to go through my head as they took me to this Oneida County jail. And I was, you know, a 17-year-old kid at the time, starting to get really terrified. And I remember the first morning they like had me all dressed in orange in this jail pod area. And I walk out and a couple people, you know, in Washington, I would have been in a juvie. This was in New York. I was a legal adult. So they put me in a jail, which was just terrifying.
Yeah.
But a couple of these people are like, oh, you were at Woodstock. We saw that on the TV. You know, you did this, you did that. And I just like, yeah, sure. Because all of a sudden I had people like pretty much defending me and watching my back while I was in this jail. And so I just like, yeah, sure. We got those cops. Sure. But yeah, it was a terrifying experience.
Oh, man. That sucks. What a weird situation. Why did they have a judge on call at that time on a Sunday night? Like, it's the wrong approach.
Can't even fathom it. I look back on it now and it just doesn't make any sense. And perhaps I'm remembering it somewhat incorrectly, but I'm pretty sure that they had it right there on site.
Jesus. Oh, also, can I just point out that watching propane tanks explode through the shattered glass of a cop car at Woodstock 99 is probably the most wild vignette I've ever heard. So did you get let out? Like, what happened?
I got arrested at probably like 11 at night or so, and they considered that hour from 11. Well, first of all, I got a public defender that next day, went to court at something, and they told me, well, you could try to fight it, but we'll probably hold you here for a couple weeks till you have a court date. or you can plead guilty and they'll most likely send you home. So the public defender said, you can get out of here in a couple days, most likely, if you plead guilty. And so that's what I did. Looking back on it now, I would never do that. I would have fought tooth and nail. But I did that, and so they gave me a 5-day sentence. They accused me of throwing a rock at a cop, throwing a bottle and an object, 3 different accusations, and I don't know which one they settled on. So I got my 5-day sentence, and then it was that first 11 at night till midnight, what they counted as a day. I spent 3 days in, and then at midnight the next day, they let me out, and I walked out of the jail, and there was Chad there with a taxi, just there to rescue me. It was the happiest thing I saw. I didn't know if he had caught the train and gone home. I had really no idea.
Good on you, Chad. That's heartwarming. Yeah.
I think I actually ended up talking to you once while you were in jail, though.
In the courtroom, I believe.
Sometime, because I...
Wasn't at the courtroom?
I saw you in court, so I made it to the court, and it was... Okay. I don't know if you remember, it was both of you. Both you and that other guy that, like, got arrested with mm-hmm. you, they brought out at the same time and accused you guys of throwing something at an officer.
Yeah, and I know he didn't, because I was sitting there talking to him. Yeah, 2 people for 1 incident.
Yeah.
Hmm. So Kelvin, we'll circle back to kind of what this meant for you later. But Chad, I just want to come back to your perception of this event. Like your friend is just being hauled off. Like, how did you feel in that moment? What happened next?
I was trying to find him, honestly, because, you know, I saw what happened. I saw they kind of taken away. And then at that point, the riot cops really started, like, forming their lines and trying to push people back. So I saw where all the cop cars were that they... and assumed that that's where they kind of take him. So I started trying to walk towards that, right? And again, now there's all sorts of fires. To Calvin's point, you're hearing things kind of a little blow up somewhat. And then, but they pushed me back, right? So
let's just, I just want to zoom in on the pandemonium happening around you. Like, can you just describe that to me? Do any sort of memories stick out?
Just people walk in every direction. Again, the riot cops kind of coming in. It was like at first they were just kind of letting it go, but then they must have got enough numbers to where they thought they could just push people away from where all the fires were. And that's what they did. They just formed their lines, started pushing people out. And then, you know, like I said, all the cops and everything, cars and all that were behind their lines and pushing people away from it. And again, it's such a big area that it wasn't like cops elbow to elbow. It'd be like a cop and then 15 or 20 feet away, another cop, and then a line of them all the way across kind of pushing. So you had people kind of walking in between them and stuff. And that's what I did. So I walked in between them. And at some point they, you know, came up to me like, out of here or else we're gonna arrest you. It didn't seem like they couldn't take 500,000 people away, right? So I don't think they wanted to arrest too many people, but especially since what the number I ended up hearing, there was only 7 people ended up being arrested. But yeah, after that though, once you got away from the stage area, it was just people again still throwing glow sticks and just back to the kind of the party, right? Because once you're away from that stage area, you had to walk so far to get back to the tents and where everything was at. And actually that was kind of another crazy part. It was like a war zone, and that like people were ripping apart ATM machines. That was one thing I definitely, and tearing apart all of the you know, the booths. So like if there was a booth out there, it was totally ransacked, you know, garbage. I mean, it was insane the amount of garbage that was just everywhere. I mean, like you couldn't walk without walking over bottles and paper and food waste and, you know, torn apart ATM machines and booths and just stuff like that. It was crazy.
Did you, I mean, I'm going to be completely honest with you. If I saw people tearing apart an ATM machine in the middle of this kind of riot, this environment, I'd have probably taken some money, or I'd have certainly taken like some merch. Did you?
I think that, so when I was walking back, right, so everything was happening at the fires and then Calvin gets arrested and then stuff going on. By the time I was walking back through all that other area, it's like the wave of people had gone through there and ripped it all apart, right? So I saw ATM machines just ripped totally apart. I don't know if they got any money out of there or not. It seemed like they worked pretty hard to rip this thing apart, and it was just sitting there. Nobody was necessarily around it anymore. So either they got all the money or just gave up and couldn't get to it. But no, I didn't try and take any money or anything like that. And it was all on all the merch and okay. stuff like that. Like I said, the booths were wasted. Like they'd already been ransacked.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a Woodstock 99 t-shirt from a ransacked booth would probably fetch a nice price on eBay these days.
Oh, yeah. I might bid on it if I can find one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, after this. So all right. So you've lost your friend and you're kind of walking back towards the tents. Keep taking me through that.
I walked all over the place. And again, there was like the rave scene, I think, was kind of going on back at that point. So there was some, I think there was, I can't even remember what the bands were that played there that like were like the rave type of bands. But, you know, there was a big tents and stuff that people were just partying in, just tons of drinking. That's where I would have said I saw the most like intoxicated, like women running around. And, you know, I remember one thing, I'm walking through the tent type of areas and like just seeing like the frat boy type of dudes like running with, you know, women on their back, just running around, just going crazy. I mean, not necessarily doing anything other than just making noise, being drunk and running and just wanting to break whatever they could see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Were you feeling upset? Like, you've just watched your friend get arrested. You're by yourself at this point. I think I'd find that kind of traumatizing.
I was upset, definitely. I mean, like, you know, pissed that, you know, my friend that I'm supposed to, like, you know, be hanging out with this whole time is now going to jail for all I knew. But then also kind of wandering around wondering, you know, how am I going to get back a hold of him? And then, you know, what am I going to do in between that time? Right. So, if that time frame's right, he was like arrested around 11, I probably was up until like 12, 1, maybe just kind of wandering around, seeing everything. And then just decided to just go to bed because, I was going to get up and try and find him the next morning.
All right. So then you went to bed about 1. And you just, yeah, you decided to look for him the next day. So take me to the next day.
So that was one weird thing. So when I went to bed, it was still, obviously it was nighttime, tents everywhere, you know, just people all over the place. Well, when I woke up and got out of the tent, it was light and it's like everybody was gone, but it was almost like everybody's tent was just sitting there kind of half smashed. And what I first thought was, how the hell did I sleep through the night without getting like stepped on, you know what I mean, without people like bowling over the tent and like, you know, crushing me? Because when I woke up, it was like a wasteland. Like, most people were already all gone.
Wow.
And I can't imagine that I slept like that late in the morning. I can't remember what time it was, but it was crazy how much mass exodus there had been in between when I went to sleep and woke up. And I'm guessing it was just that everybody had left that night and not as many people stayed that last night to, you know, but a lot of the tents were still there. A lot of people didn't pack up their tents, I'm guessing, just because they were all busted up. But, you know, I was still kind of there almost, you know, memory is what it is, but it seemed like an island, one tent standing and the rest just kind of crushed.
Man, that must have been a bit surreal. I mean, I hate it when I like go to bed with my wife or something and then she wakes up before I do and I wake up and I'm alone. I find it really like disconcerting. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened without me? People have left.
Yeah.
Like, waking up in this just like moonscape full of junk by yourself, that would have been really weird.
It was definitely crazy. And again, the amount of trash everywhere was something I had never seen before. I mean, just stuff everywhere.
Oh, shit. All right. So once you gathered your possessions, what did you do? How do you go looking for Kelvin?
So I got out of there. I can't remember how I went back to the train station, right? So I packed up what I could, right? And so I was carrying like my bag on my front or Calvin's bag on my back. And I left stuff too. I don't think I took the tent and stuff like that just because it was extra crap to carry, right? And so then got out of there and then got back to the train station. And I remember I stashed like our bags under the bench at the train station and was just like, okay, I'm going to go find him now, right? So I think I called like, you know, I called my mom. I think I talked to his dad and such and told him what was going on. And then found out where he was at, right? And then actually went found out when the trial was going to be and then got there, right? I stayed in a hotel and there was still people like at the hotels and stuff too that were still trying to continue the party. I remember like some dude was running up and was like, you guys came from Woodstock and like we're going to continue the rave from last night. And I'm like, all right, you know, and I'm just trying to find Calvin. So again, found out where he was, went and saw them in court, right? So I found the court. I had to have taken a cab. I don't think I walked, but got there and saw them come in all chained up and in their, you know, Oneida County jumpsuits and then get charged. And then found out that they could get released. I must have been on the phone a bunch, right? Calling the court, calling whatever. And then found out when they were going to get released, or at least when he was able to be picked up. I think that was the deal. Like, they would have let him out that night if somebody was there to take him. Because again, that jail was in the middle of nowhere. So I was like, yeah, I'll be there. I'll come to pick him up. So I got a cab. We went out there and waited for him. And then he was able to be released. And then we took him from there to the hotel we were staying at. And I remember, I think he asked me at one point, like, if I would try and help this other guy, the guy that, you know, was arrested with him, get out. But somehow that didn't end up happening. So that dude had to stay in jail and Calvin got to leave.
Okay, so I'm guessing that once you got Calvin back, like that was kind of the end of your Woodstock 99 experience. I'm guessing that you guys went home.
Yeah, we had to like beg the train people to switch our tickets back to, you know, to let us ride. Like we had missed our train, so we had to switch our train, and then they let us do. Like, and the guy was reluctant about it. You know, us again being a couple dirty kids at that point. You know, trying to looking all burnt and ragged, and trying to get on a train, and they let us. So they wanted to make us pay a bunch of money, but he just let us let us go.
That's good. So was this like immediately a media sensation? Were you guys like on this train going back home, and you're aware that it was all over the papers and stuff?
Maybe a little bit at that point. I don't remember it being that big of a deal. I remember people, like, I remember the train guy when we were trying to switch our tickets being like, oh, you were at, you know, Woodstock and blah, blah, blah. And they'd be like, yeah. And then he got arrested and we were trying. He somewhat sympathized with us, really, right? I mean, I think that's why he let us switch our tickets. But then I don't remember it being a huge deal on the way back because I think the crowd had left by then, right? I mean, so we're just on train with normal people at this point coming all the way back across the country. And so at some point when we got back is when we started hearing more and more about it. Saw the newspaper article about man from Olympia arrested in Woodstock violence. I remember that being the headline in the local paper. And it was Calvin that had gotten arrested. And it was kind of funny because what I remember is it being like man from Olympia. And we're like, dude, he's 17-year-old kid, right? You know, it made it sound like he was some, you know, big proponent of all this chaos that went on.
And how was that for you, Calvin? I mean, you've just spent a bunch of days in prison. How are you feeling?
I was definitely shell-shocked. One of my main thoughts in my head as we were riding the train back is, how much trouble am I going to be in with my dad when I get home? And knowing that I didn't do anything to be arrested, but whether or not he's going to believe that. 17-year-old kid goes to this party and gets arrested. Obviously, he did something to deserve it. Took him a long time to believe that I was truly innocent over it.
Yeah.
I feel like I did get some in trouble for it, but I don't think he did a whole lot because I already been punished. Yeah.
Did either of you guys get any sort of street cred amongst your friends for like you were at Woodstock 99? Like, eventually this came out in the news and the papers. Like, it was a fairly big media story at the time and you guys were there.
I don't know about street cred, but yeah. As far as a lot of good stories, I mean, talking about it a lot and stuff like that, but
yeah, it makes for good stories at a party or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
At the time, everybody that we knew we were going, and so that didn't change anything. And then everybody, after hearing both our sides of the story, believed that I didn't actually throw a rock or whatever at a cop.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Kelvin, you pled guilty to a crime or a misdemeanor or whatever the technical term is. I mean, has this been a problem throughout your life?
I mean, it definitely hasn't been a problem. That hasn't followed me, that I know of at least. But the being arrested for something I didn't do has definitely changed my opinion and certain interactions with police throughout my life. I had been pulled over for walking before, for example, and, you know, I was just walking down the street and a cop pulls onto the sidewalk in front of me and wants to talk to me. And I just like start thinking about what could happen. You know, I haven't done anything. Is this going to all happen again? And so, you know, obviously I get defensive right off the bat, which doesn't look good to any officer. So, in that way, it has followed me, I'd say.
Yeah. All right. Look, I guess I've got one last question, maybe two. Two, because I'm not entirely sure what this one question is, but it's a general feeling that I'm trying to get across, is that I think for all of us, we're all getting older. You know, I've got some kids. You guys have both got kids. And yet the era of Limp Bizkit and stuff, that wasn't that long ago. So I want to know, like, I don't know, how do you feel when you look back 20 years ago? You know, do you guys get nostalgic? Are you sentimental people? And if so, how much does this event sort of register as part of your youth?
I mean, it was definitely there, but I think some of the other festivals that we've gone to, like Bumper Shoot and some of the just local bands in town of Olympia, like almost register more to me because it's always been, I don't know, more fun in some way. I mean, we had a lot of fun there, don't get me wrong, but it was, I don't know, just some of the other things that we've done, I think, register more than that. It's never been a huge thing in my life.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, like, it was an experience, so I'll put it that way, and something to definitely remember forever. But to Calvin's point, I mean, we had been going to shows for a while at that point, and then continued to go to shows after that, and had seen so many, right? And that was just one of the experiences. And again, it's great stories and stuff, but, and even going through it, it wasn't like traumatic in a sense, right? I mean, there was, and obviously a little more for Calvin, but you know, for me, it was like, I don't get too terribly worked up about many things. So it wasn't like I was running around freaking out, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, what do I do next to solve the problem and then move on? So it definitely wasn't any lasting trauma for me.
And you guys haven't seen each other in like close to 15 years. Like today, Kelvin, you drove to see Chad. Thanks for doing that. You drove a long way. I want to know, like, when you guys saw each other for the first time in 15 years, were you both like, oh my God, there's my you know, buddy from Woodstock 99? You know, was it, how's it been to see each other today?
It's been good. We'll probably get to hang out later because I only got into town maybe an hour before we started this. So, but it was really good. It's been a long time since I've seen him, and we talked a little bit on the phone to catch up, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think the cool thing would be like seeing him now and then going up and visiting him and stuff too, and, you know, getting to, you know, rebuild the friendship, I guess, right? And the main thing I was wondering after not seeing him for that long is, did he get fat or not? No, he stayed just as skinny as he always has. So that was no surprise.
All right. Well, I'm going to leave you guys to it. And thank you so much. Thanks so much for, you know, for all the traveling, Kelvin. And thanks for telling me your story.
It's no, thanks for hearing it.
It's pretty wild.
It was. Good times.
If you've enjoyed today's episode and you're thinking, hey, I've got a story that's interesting, something that I think would work for this show, then please get in touch. I love hearing feedback. I love hearing your story suggestions. So just hit me up. I am Julian Morgans on Instagram and Morgans Julian on Twitter. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Tuffery. It was edited and mixed by Jimmy Saunders, who also did our theme music. Our cover art is by Naomi Lee Beveridge. And this whole thing has been a Super Reel production.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.